Chazor Hashem Maseches Per Parak Ches Mishnah Dalad and Maseches Demar Parak Gimel Mishnah Hey. We know that Matnos Aniyim, the gifts which go to poor people, are exempt from tithes, and therefore if somebody buys Matnos Aniyim from a poor person, he doesn't need to tithe them. The question is, what can we assume is Matnos Aniyim when it is bought from a poor person? So in general, anything cooked or processed properly, we assume was not given to the poor person as a gift, because usually it was given to the poor person at its first stage. There would be no reason for the owner, for the farmer, to process the food and then give it to the poor person. Rather, he would give it to the poor person straight away. However, when it comes to vegetables, because vegetables don't last in the storage, so if the farmer forgot to tithe the vegetables when the harvest was completed, when he realizes instead of going to get some vegetables from the storage, which haven't been processed to give to the poor person, he doesn't have any in storage, and therefore he's going to be forced to give the poor person some of his processed and cooked vegetables. And therefore it would make sense for a poor person to have received cooked vegetables as matnos aniyim. And therefore, as long as it's not a lot of it, one would not need to tithe that if he buys it from a poor person, because he can assume it comes from matnos aniyim. Mishnah Hey, when discussing Maisa Oni, which is the tenth of one's produce which he has to give to the poor people, the Torah at one point says you shall give it to them, which implies that you have the right to choose how to distribute it to them, but elsewhere the Torah says you shall leave it to them, which implies that you just have to leave it for them and you can't choose how to distribute it. And the way the Chachom resolved this is that they said that if you give out the Maisa Oni at home, then you can choose how to distribute the entire thing. You could technically give it all to your relative. On the other hand, if you give it out of the threshing floor, then you can choose how to distribute up to half of it. So you could give half of it to a relative, let's say. But the other half you have to give out equally, and you have to make sure that there are at least 2 meals worth given to each person. And we saw that according to Rabbi Akiva, it's enough to give 2 meals worth which someone could survive on, even though in general he would eat more, but according to the Tanna Kamma, you have to give him 2 normal meals worth. Now if within the half which he's giving out, equally, there is not enough to give 2 meals worth to each person, then instead of him giving less than 2 meals worth to each person, he should allow them to split it themselves, so that at least he is not directly going against the 2 meals worth amount. And we said also that this applies even to Kohanim and Leviim, who are giving Maaser Oni from their own field. The last 3 Mishnayos of the Masechta discuss the general obligation of Tzedakah, and specifically a community's obligations in Tzedakah. And we said in Mishnah Zayin that a community's tzedakah fund has to make sure that it gives 2 meals, actual meals, not just the money for the meals, but 2 actual meals to any poor person who is passing through the city. And if that poor person wants to sleep in the city, they have to provide him with the means to do that. And if he stays for Shabbos, then they have to provide him with 3 meals so that he can have the 3 meals of Shabbos. We then went on to discuss the 2 sort of funds which applied for the poor people of the city, those who lived in that community itself. And the first one was the kupa. And that was something which all of the households in that community had to contribute to. And the poor people who were supported by the kupah were those who couldn't support themselves for a week, and they received on every Erev Shabbos enough to provide them 14 meals, which is enough for the entire week. And because this was a sort of tax which all of the households had to pay, if they didn't pay it, then those who were collecting it were allowed to actually take the person, the household's belongings, until they pay what they need to for the kupah. However, this could lead to corruption, and to avoid that, it had to be collected by 2 people together. And when it's being distributed to the poor people, 3 people had to do that, because it's like a normal monetary case of a beis din which requires 3 judges. Now, the second fund for poor people of that community was called the Tamchoi, and that provided 2 meals every day, each morning, for those poor people who couldn't even survive and couldn't provide themselves for a day. Shneches, when he has 200 zuz of money or property which is readily available to be used, so he could technically spend that money or property to buy food, and 200 zuz is enough to provide him for a year. So if he has 200 zuz, then he's not allowed to take matnos aniyim or tzedakah, and if he does, then he'll be punished, that before he dies, he'll end up being poor, and he'll actually need to take charity. However, if he has any amount below 200 zuz, and then he receives a lot in one go, let's say 1,000 zuz in one go, as long as it's in one go, he can take it all, because he received it as somebody who was poor. Similarly, if he has 50 zuz only, but he's doing business with it so that he can actually provide himself for the coming year, he also cannot take tzedakah. Now, somebody who is poor enough to take, but he nevertheless does not take, rather he works extra hard, doesn't want to be a burden on other people, he'll be rewarded that he'll end up, before he dies, having enough money to support others. And the Pesukim which promised reward to those who have faith and trust in Hashem apply to that person, and we also said that that Pesuk would apply to a judge who judges cases honestly. Because it shows that he's doing it for Hashem's sake. Continuing on the same theme, the Mishnah told us that somebody who pretends to be disabled in some way, so that people will pity him more and give him more tzedakah, he'll end up actually getting that disability. And finally, a judge who is dishonest and corrupt, the Torah implies that his punishment will be that his eyesight will dim, he won't be able to see properly, and again, that is midah keneged midah, the punishment matches the avera of not looking at the case properly, but being corrupt. Now, the main focus of the first parak of Maseches Demai was about showing the various leniencies which Demai has over Tevel produce. Remember, Tevel is produce which has definitely not been tithed, whereas Demai is produce which has been bought from an Am Haaretz, and therefore it's a doubt as to whether it has been tithed. Now, Yochanan Kohen Gadol did research into what the general populace was separating from their produce as tithes, and he instituted, number one, the one who buys produce from an Am Haaretz does not need to separate Truma Gedola, which is given to the Kohanim, because the Am Haaretz do separate that. Virtually all of the Am Haaretz do separate that, because if they don't separate that and then they eat it, the punishment for a non-Kohen eating Truma Gedola is the death penalty, and therefore because of the severity, it can be assumed that they do separate Truma Gedola. However, Maaser Rishon, which is a tenth of the produce which goes to a Levi, and Maaser Oni, which is a tenth of the produce which goes to the poor person, not all Am Haaretz separate that, and therefore it does need to be designated by the one who buys that Demai produce. However, the Levi and the poor person do not receive it. And the reason for this is because Hamitzim Mechaveir Olav Haraya. The Levi or the poor person who wants to take something from somebody else, you can only do that if you prove that you're entitled to it. But here they can't prove whether the Am Haaretz did separate tithes or not, and therefore they cannot receive it. However, it still must be designated to remove the Tevel status of this produce. Thirdly, when it comes to Trumas Maaser, which is the tenth of the Maaser Rishon, which the Levi has to separate and give to the Kohen, so even though the punishment for a non-Kohen eating this is also the death penalty, the Am Haaretz don't think that this applies always. They don't think that it applies when Maaser Rishon isn't taken, and therefore they don't necessarily take Trumas Maaser, and therefore the buyer would need to designate it, and not only designate it, you would actually have to give it to the Kohen, because a non-Kohen can't eat it. So he would actually give that to the Kohen. And fourthly, when it comes to Maaser Sheni, which is a tenth of the produce, which one needs to take up and eat in Yerushalayim, the buyer of the Demai produce does have to separate this, and he does have to bring it up to Yerushalayim, because since he can eat it himself, he's not losing out, and therefore he is obligated to actually separate this tithe and eat that produce in Yerushalayim. Now, Mishnah Aleph told us that if somebody buys produce from an Am Haaretz, which often grows in the wild, not in someone's field, and therefore it's hefker, it's ownerless, and we know that something which is ownerless is exempt from the tithes. So if you buy this from an Am Haaretz, then there's a safek safeka, there's a double doubt as to whether you're chayav to tithe this. Firstly, it could be that that produce wasn't obligated at all in Maaseres, because it could have been hefker. And even if it wasn't hefker, it could be that the Am Haaretz did tithe it. And therefore there's two reasons to exempt you, two doubtful reasons, and when there is a double doubt, we are lenient, and therefore in that case, the buyer would not need to tithe the produce at all. And one of the examples of this was vinegar which came from the area of Eretz Yisrael, which was called Yehuda. And the reason for this is because when the Beis HaMikdosh was around, there was a miracle that none of the wine which came from the area of Yehuda turned sour and turned into vinegar. Because that wine was used for the Beis HaMikdosh, for the Mizbeach, but that meant that any vinegar which was found in Yehuda, instead of being made from wine, it was usually made from worse quality parts of the grapes, like the grape skins, and because they were much worse quality, they were often just thrown away and therefore made hefker. So because the vinegar in Yehuda was often hefker, this leniency of Demai would apply that the buyer would not need to tithe that produce. Again, because of a safek safeka, a double doubt. Mishnah Beis discussed the leniencies of Maaser Sheni, which is separated from Demai produce. In general, a chomesh, a fifth, has to be added to the Maaser Sheni's value if it's redeemed onto money, but for Demai, it doesn't have to be added. In general, any Maaser Sheni has to be eaten or destroyed by Erev Pesach of the fourth or seventh year of Shemitah. However, this does not apply to Demai. That's known as beer, by the way. Thirdly, an Oinein, who is somebody whose relative has died but not yet been buried, he cannot eat regular Maaser Sheni, but he can eat Demai Maaser Sheni. Fourthly, unlike regular Maaser Sheni, it can be bought out of Yerushalayim once it's been brought to Yerushalayim, and then redeemed again onto money, and then bring the money back into Yerushalayim. The fifth difference is that he can allow some of it to be lost on the journey towards Yerushalayim. He doesn't have to be so particular about making sure every single last bit gets to Yerushalayim. And as well as this, unlike regular Maaser Sheni, he's allowed to give Demai Maaser Sheni to an Am Haaretz to eat, even though the Am Haaretz is likely to eat it while he is Tomei. He's allowed to do this as long as he eats that amount himself as like additional Maaser Sheni while he is pure. And Rabbi Meir added another difference, and that is that even once he's redeemed Maaser Sheni onto money and then bought produce with that money, he's allowed to then redeem that produce onto money again and bring that money to Yerushalayim, whereas the Chachom say that no, one can only redeem Maaser Sheni produce onto money if it's the original Maaser Sheni produce, but not any later produce which became Maaser Sheni as a result of redemption. Mishnah Gimel, if something is only obligated to Mijabonon in Maestros at all, so in the case of Demai, you'll be exempt. For example, if you buy the produce for the sake of planting it, or for some other purpose other than consuming it directly, so in the case of Demai, he'll be exempt. And one application of this is that produce which grows in the part of Eretz Yisrael, which was conquered in the times of Yeshua when we first entered Eretz Yisrael, but it was not reconquered in the times of Ezra when we reconquered part of Eretz Yisrael. So that means that that area of land in Eretz Yisrael, produce which grows there is only obligated midrabbanan in the Maaseres, and therefore in a case of Demai, he would be exempt. The Mishnah then listed a number of holy foods, which because of their holy status, it's assumed that the Am Haaretz did tithe it. And therefore the buyer would not need to separate the tithes. The first, the challah, the part of the dough which is given to a kohen. Again, there's a severe punishment for not separating that. And therefore the Amei Haaretz are assumed to have separated it. Secondly, meduma, which is when truma gets mixed up with chulin, and you're not sure which is the truma, and therefore the entire mixture becomes like truma. So only a kohen can eat that mixture. So just like Amei Haaretz are assumed to tithe the regular truma, they are also assumed to tithe the meduma, a mixture containing truma. Thirdly, food which is bought using my sasheni money. So that food now becomes Maaser Sheni. And fourthly, when it comes to a Korban Mincha, the leftover flour which isn't brought on the Mizbeach, rather it goes to the Kohanim, again that flour is assumed to be tithed. And then at the end of that Mishnah, we said that Bisham, I say, that if you have a mixture of oil and other spices, which one would smear on his body, smearing oil on one's body is considered consuming it directly, just like drinking it would be. And therefore, in general, it would be obligated mid Araisa in Maestros. So in a case of Demai, it's obligated. However, according to Beis Hillel, that's not considered consuming it directly. It's not like drinking it. We only say that smearing oil on one's body is considered like drinking it if it could be drunk, but he just decides to smear it on his body. But this oil, it's barely edible. He wouldn't really drink it, and therefore smearing it on his body is not considered a normal direct consumption of it, and therefore it's generally only obligated to Jabbanon, so in a case of Demai, it will be exempt totally. Mishnah Dalet. The Mishnah in the beginning of Perek Gimel tells us that a poor person is allowed to eat Demai without tithing it. Now this leads to many leniencies, because technically somebody could always make himself poor. He could declare all of his property ownerless, and therefore he's now poor. So because of that, we do consider Demai to be permissible food, because it's easy to just make it permissible for somebody, for anybody. And practical applications of this is that it could be used, for example, for an Erev, and you can make brachas before it, after it, you can make a zimun, because it is considered permissible food. Now, whereas one makes a bracha when tithing Tevel, no bracha is made when tithing Demai, because Sofik brachas lahokel. If it's a doubt as to whether one should make a bracha, if the bracha is made Jabbanon, then we are lenient, and he does not make the bracha. Now, because he doesn't make a bracha, he can tithe the Demai while he is unclothed, because no bracha needs to be made. Similarly, although one is not allowed to tithe Tevel or Demai on Shabbos itself, because it's like fixing the produce, one could tithe Demai during Bein HaShemoshos, which is twilight as Shabbos is coming in, where it's a doubt as to whether it's Shabbos or not. You can't tithe Tevel at that stage, but you can tithe Demai. Now, if you designate the tithes of Demai in the wrong order, you can still say the Vidui HaMaestros, which is when one declares that he's fulfilled everything that Hashem commanded him with regards to the tithes. He would do that generally at the time of the Bir, on Erev Pesach of the 4th and 7th year of Shemitah. So he is allowed to say that even if he changes the order of the tithes. Whereas when it comes to Tevel, if he does it in the wrong order, then he cannot say Vidui HaMaestros because he hasn't done everything that Hashem said. And finally, the Perek ended off by telling us that if a weaver smears oil onto his fingers, perhaps to protect his fingers, so that oil is obligated in Maestros because it's smeared on himself and it could technically be drank, which means in general it is chayv mid Araisa in tithes, and therefore in a Demai case he is obligated. However, oil which somebody puts into wool, that's totally absorbed into the wool. He might do that so that he can comb it easier. But either way, he's not smearing on his body, and therefore in general, would not be obligated mid Araisa. So in the case of Demai, he is totally exempt from separating the tithes from that oil. Perek Beis. Although produce which one buys in the area of Eretz Yisrael, which was not reconquered by Ezra, and therefore it's only obligated mid Jabbanon. So we said before that in the case of Demai, he'll be exempt from separating tithes from that. However, if the produce which you buy in that area is recognizable as Eretz Yisrael produce, it's recognizable that that produce came from the actual Eretz Yisrael which was reconquered. So in that case, you can no longer assume that the produce you're buying in that area was planted in that area. You've got to assume that it was planted in Eretz Yisrael itself, and therefore you do need to tithe it even when it comes to Demai. And we listed a few types of produce like that, but those types of produce, not all of the Eretz Yisrael figs, for example, were recognizably from Eretz Yisrael, but there were some which were recognizably from Eretz Yisrael. Now, when it comes to rice, all of the rice in Eretz Yisrael was different to the rice of outside Eretz Yisrael. Which means that even if you're buying rice in Eretz Yisrael itself, and it's being sold with other Eretz Yisrael produce, if it doesn't have the appearance of Eretz Yisrael rice, then we can certainly assume that it did not come from Eretz Yisrael, because they look totally different, and therefore you would not need to tithe that, even if it's being sold in Eretz Yisrael. Now, once we've discussed the various leniencies and the obligation of Demai, the next couple of prokem will focus on who is the one who is obligated to tithe Demai. And firstly, we had to define a ne'emon. A ne'emon is basically the opposite of an am ha'aretz. A ne'emon is somebody who is trusted and reliable with regards to tithing. Now, part of the decree of Demai is that everybody is assumed to be an am ha'aretz, unless we otherwise know them as a ne'emon. And to become a ne'emon, one has to declare in front of three people that firstly, he's going to tithe everything that he eats or sells or buys. And secondly, that he will not eat at an Am Haaretz's house, because he doesn't trust the Am Haaretz, and he assumes that the Am Haaretz does not tithe his produce. So if he declares this in front of three people, and then two witnesses testify that he actually takes this on, then he becomes a ne'emon. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not necessary that he never eats at an Am Haaretz's house. If once or twice he eats at an Am Haaretz's house, he still remains a ne'emon. However, the Chachom still argue. Mishnah Gimel. While we're on the topic, the Mishnah tells us in order to become a Chover, as well as doing everything which a Ne'emon has to do, a Chover has to do a couple of more things, because a Chover is somebody who is trusted and reliable with regards to the laws of Tumah as well. So he also needs to declare that he won't sell any food to an Am Haaretz, because that would indirectly be causing the Am Haaretz to eat things while Tomei. And as well as that, he has to declare that he will not buy anything from an Am Haaretz, except for things which haven't become wet since they've been detached from the ground. Because then they can't become Tomei. But if it's become wet since it was detached from the ground, then he will not buy that from the Am Haaretz, because he would need to assume that that is Tomei. And just like a Ne'emon, he can't eat at an Am Haaretz's house. But as well as that, he can't even allow an Am Haaretz to eat at his house. Unless he changes his clothes into the Chover's clothes, because otherwise the Am Haaretz's clothes might make the Chover or the Chover's belongings Tomei. Rabbi Yehuda again argued, and this time Rabbi Yehuda added things. He said that although the practical ramification of being a Chover is with regards to the laws of Tumah and Tahara, of impurity and purity, a Chover is supposed to be somebody who is generally more observant. He's more particular about mitzvahs and keeping halacha, and therefore he's also not allowed to raise an animal which might steal from other people's fields. He can't frequently make vows because he might come to break them. He can't frequently behave in an unserious manner, or frequently become Tomei from dead bodies if it's not for a mitzvah. Because then he'll be Tomei for an entire week, and it's difficult to purify oneself from Tumah from a dead body. And as well as that, he should learn and serve Talmid Chachom in the Beis HaMedrash to show that he is particular in mitzvahs all round. However, once again, the Chachom still argue. Mishnah Dalet, one is never able to sell something to an Am Haaretz without tithing it first, because otherwise you're causing him to eat untithed produce. The question is, if you sell produce to somebody who is particular about separating the tithes, who is the one who is obligated to separate the tithes? Is it the seller or the buyer? So in general, the answer to that question is that the seller has to separate the tithes before selling it, even to somebody who is particular about maaseres. However, a baker, or somebody who sells in bulk, and therefore he estimates how much he gives, so these two people don't make a lot of profit. And because of that, the Chachom said that they only need to separate Trumas Maisa and Chala. Trumas Maisa they need to separate even if they're not a Levi, because no Maiserishna is being given to the Levi from which to separate Trumas Maisa. And therefore the baker himself has to separate Trumas Maisa. But the point is, the baker or the person who is selling in bulk does not need to separate Maisa Sheni. The buyer will separate Maisa Sheni after having bought it, and the reason for this, again, is because they don't make a lot of profit. And we saw at the end of Mishnah Hay that Rabbi Yossi says that this applies even to somebody who sells just a small amount if he sells it by estimation. Because again, there he also won't make a lot of profit, because they'll usually give the buyer a bit extra. Even though he does make a bit more profit there, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's still not enough profit to obligate him to separate Maisa Sheni. Now, Rabbi Meir at the beginning of Mishnah Hay told us that if a seller is generally exempt from separating Maisa Sheni, so for example a baker, but then one time he sells it in a different way, such that he does make a lot of profit now. Nevertheless, we say that just like generally he's exempt from separating tithes of Maisa Sheni, he remains exempt in this case as well. And the same would apply vice versa. If he's generally obligated, and one time he sells in bulk, let's say, even that time he would have to separate Maisa Sheni. And what is considered bulk? So when it comes to solid food, it's 3 kav, and when it comes to liquid, it's the amount of liquid which can be bought with 1 dinar. Paragimel, another leniency of Demai is that poor people can eat Demai without tithing it. And one of the reasons for this is so that people will be more willing to give tzedakah, because they won't need to tithe that produce. As well as that, soldiers who are passing past a town, and therefore it's an obligation over people of that town to provide them with food, they can provide them also with Demai, because they're considered poor at that time. They're away from their property and their food. And thirdly, Raman Gamliel would actually feed his poor workers Demai, even though he gained by doing so, because otherwise he would have had to pay them with other food. Nevertheless, he still allowed it because they were poor. Now, Bishama actually argue with this whole principle, and they say that poor people cannot eat Demai without tithing it. And therefore, the people who are collecting tzedakah from the people of the city should make sure to give the produce which is given by Ami Haaretz. They should give that to poor people who do tithe, and give the produce which is given by non-Ami Haaretz, who did tithe it already, they should give that to poor Ami Haaretz. And that way, everybody will be eating tithe produce. However, the Chachom say you shouldn't do this, Because if an Am HaAretz giver finds out that you don't trust him with regards to the tithes, he'll be upset and he'll stop even giving tzedakah altogether. So to avoid that, you should just give whatever comes, give it to any poor person. But now that means that the poor person should really tithe it, according to Beis Shammai, because it's Demai. Mishnah Beis, and we also saw a similar case in Mishnah Gimel, that one is not allowed to put Tevel or Demai onto the side of the road if that Tevel or Demai was his, or even if he just picked it up intending to eat it. He can't now put it back down onto the road because it's become his, and that means that he is now being the cause of somebody picking it up and eating it when it's not tithed. So he can only put it on the side of the road if he tithes it first. Now, if a buyer and a seller agree on a particular price, let's say per bundle of vegetables, and then the buyer picks up a whole load of bundles intending to buy those, he now has performed an act of acquisition. He's acquired them via hagbar, by lifting them up, which means that to go back on the sale and to give them back to the seller is like selling it back to him. And of course, you're not allowed to sell produce which hasn't been tithed, and therefore you can only put it back down and return it to the seller if he tithes it first. However, if the price hasn't yet been agreed upon, then lifting them up does not acquire them, and therefore you can just put them down without tithing them. Now, I said before that if you sell a small quantity of the Mai or Tevel, because you make quite a lot of profit, relatively, from that produce, so the seller has to separate the tithes. And according to the Chachom, the same applies if somebody gives a gift of a small amount. Even though the reason doesn't apply anymore, because of course the seller is not making any profit, we don't make exceptions, and therefore the seller would need to tithe that. However, according to Yossi, when it comes to definite Tevel, you're allowed to give that without tithing it, as long as you tell the person you're giving it to, because people are generally more particular about tithing Tevel than the Mai, because that's definitely untithed, and therefore the receiver probably will tithe it, so as long as you tell him that it's Tevel, you can do so. Mishnah Dalet, if somebody gives wheat to a Kusi, who is somebody from a certain nation of Kusim whose conversion was doubtful, it was uncertain, or if you give wheat to an Am HaAretz, and you want the Kusi or the Am HaAretz to grind it for you, and you come back and you take the flour, or if you just give one of these people produce to look after, you can assume that what you get back is what you gave him, and didn't switch it with other people's. Because even though an Am HaAretz and a Kusi are not trusted with regards to tithes, we don't suspect them of stealing and switching produce with other people's, and therefore if you tithe it before giving it to them, you will not need to tithe it when you receive it back. However, if you give wheat to a non-Jewish grinder, then we suspect him of switching the wheat with other people who gave him wheat, with their wheat, and the other people could be Am HaAretz, which means that the flour you get back could be Demai, and therefore you would have to tithe it again. And if you give produce to a non-Jew to look after, so you don't need to assume that other people gave him produce to look after as well. It's not like a grinder, and therefore you only need to be worried that the non-Jew switched it with his own produce. But this Mishnah is of the opinion that a non-Jew's produce is totally exempt from Maaseiros, and therefore either way you would not need to separate that produce. However, contrary to Shimon, you would, because you do need to be concerned that possibly another Am HaAretz gave this non-Jew produce to look after, and that the non-Jew switched it with his produce, and that you're getting an Am HaAretz's produce, and therefore it's Demai. Mishnah Hey, if somebody gives produce to an innkeeper to cook for him, so he has to tithe that which he gives her, and that which he takes back, because she's suspected of switching that food with her own food. So she's going to eat your food, so you have to tithe it, and she's giving you her food, so you have to tithe that as well. However, contributor, you don't need to tithe that which you give her, because we assume that she's just switching it for her own sake. She's a totally dishonest person. And so since she's bringing that avera upon herself by switching it, so you do not need to tithe that which you give her. However, that which you take back, you do need to tithe to avoid doing an avera yourself.